everybody. Welcome to episode 349 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a Phoenix Files episode, an interview I did at the recent Phoenix Comic Fest in Phoenix, Arizona. I sat down and talked inking with Jonathan Glapion. It was a blast. It was so fun just to hear Jonathan talk about inking and the passion he has for it and what makes a good inker. And just the kind of the state of inking in the industry right now. And it's kind of a, I don't want to say a dying art, because I don't think it'll ever disappear completely, but it's becoming more and more rare to see inkers. You know, you see a lot of pencilers inking themselves. And, you know, we talk about it in the interview, why Jonathan doesn't necessarily think that's a good trend. I tend to agree with him. So I think that there's a lot of comic fans out there that don't understand what inking is. And Jonathan has a lot to say about, you know, what inking is. And he has a great story about how he got started in the industry. And he was just a blast to talk to. He was so fun. You know, I had never met him before. It was just a lot of fun to sit down and talk to him, and I look forward to seeing him again. So I hope you all enjoy the interview. I hope that you learn something, and hopefully we'll have Jonathan on in the future for an audio / video episode where we put it on our YouTube channel as well, and he can kind of demonstrate some of the techniques we talk about in the interview. So, you know, there's a reason that Greg Capullo, one of the top artists in the industry, works with Jonathan on a pretty regular basis. He's incredibly talented and so very good at what he does. So I'm sure that Greg would want you to listen to this interview as well, and reach out to Jonathan, let him know you appreciate his work, let him know what a great job he does. Because Greg will be the first one to say that his art wouldn't look as good without Jonathan's help. So. Again, thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll talk to you next time. All right, this is Jace from the Comic Source coming to you once again from the floor of Phoenix Comic Fest. And I have comic eater, inker, sorry, Jonathan Glapion joining me. It's early on Saturday, folks. You'll have to excuse us. Jonathan, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
So let's talk a little bit, maybe if our listeners aren't familiar, about your history with comics and some of your previous work. Did you grow up reading comics? Like, how did you...
No, I would consider myself probably a late bloomer.
Okay.
I didn't read any comics when I was a little kid or collect any comics. I probably picked up my first comic when I was in junior high from a friend who right. was already reading, and he took me to this place that seemed like a cave to me. I didn't understand it. But I think the first stuff that I looked at was some Punisher work, and then as I started picking up more, I wasn't reading them. I was mm-hmm. looking at them for the artwork.
Right, because you always were interested
yeah.
in art.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Drawing since I could pick up a pencil.
Right.
So I didn't even bother to read any of them. So I just was taking in all the art and all the different artists. Jim Lee was some of the earliest stuff that I looked at, and Todd McFarlane. Those guys were kind of like my introduction into looking at comic art.
So you'd buy the books, you'd check out the art, and did you try to like imitate their style, or were you trying to absorb, or you would just...
No, I didn't even draw any of it. I painted and stuff. Like my father, he painted. I have brothers that were into art. None of them collected comics and didn't draw anything comic related. So I was always like trying to do Bob Ross paintings and stuff like that. And my biggest influence was always Norman Rockwell.
Okay.
So I wanted to be an illustrator. So I didn't even draw any comic book stuff.
So how did that path eventually lead you here to comic book inking?
In a very strange way. Once I graduated high school, I picked up a couple of illustration jobs through one of my instructors, and I had some work that was published. So that was the first time I experienced freelance, sort of
right.
That freelance world, and I thought it was cool. And then I, I'm trying to think how I got, oh, okay, so Yeah. So because I was always interested, I went through some spell of not knowing what I wanted to do. Long story short, I lost all of my art supplies in storage.
Oh,
everything.
No.
All of my awards, my portfolios, everything. So I moped around for a year. And I was watching TV, and I don't know if you remember Entertainment Tonight, where they had the segment of how they do that.
Yep.
And they showed how Spawn was made. And so I looked at comics, but I never understood the process.
Right.
So through that episode, I saw the process, and I saw that, that's a job. These are different jobs. These people are getting paid.
Right.
And it's led me back to the freelance thing. So then from there, I tried to figure out how you got into that.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, by chance, was walking and saw a flyer for a local comic book signing. I think it was Atomic Comics at the time.
Right,
or something like that. And that there was going to be the inker, a colorist, and the art director for Todd McFarlane Productions was going to be at the signing. So there was no penciler. Things may have been different if I met a penciler in the beginning. I don't know. But I figured the closest person to touching the page would be the inker. So I would go and talk to him. So I went. I got lost. Couldn't find it. Almost went home. And then happened to drive by it and saw it. So I went in. I didn't have anything. Portfolio, nothing. I only asked, what nib do you use? And then I walked away. So I hung out in the store. And then the inker, who was working on Curse of Spawn at the time, Chance Wolf, he just came up to me and we started talking. And it so happened that he needed an assistant, someone to spot the blacks, mm-hmm. all that kind of stuff. And he gave me his business card. Come to find out, I call it. He lives in the same apartment complex as me.
What?
So, yeah. So if you want to get into comics, this is how you do it. So he lives in the same, literally around the corner from my building, which that complex was like a 5-minute drive from Todd McFarlane's house. And I didn't know it. I was in this sort of circle of guys that worked for Todd and in the industry.
Right.
Some guys are at DC. I just never knew it. You know, freelance artists, we don't come out of our houses.
Yeah, so. Right.
So that's how I accidentally got into comics. But I was always drawing still and always doing things. So in a sense, I was always sort of prepared to do something.
Right.
I just didn't know what it was that I was going to do. I could have met a letterer, and I'd probably have gotten in that way. Because once you get in, it's up to you how you maneuver.
Right.
You don't have to stay doing inks or colors. You can move yourself around and do different things. So that's how I got in.
Wow, that's an incredible story.
A long, crazy story.
So let's talk a little bit about some of your previous work. What do you think are the most high-profile projects that you've worked on?
Oh, without a doubt, Court of Owls. Court of Owls and Metal. People go back and forth which one they like more, Court of Owls or Death of the Family.
Right.
But those would be, I would say, easily the highlights probably of my career as far as what I've done so far. Hopefully I'm not done.
Right.
So
that's working with Greg Capullo, right? So what's that relationship like? I mean, you guys seem like you mesh really well together.
Yeah, it was weird in the beginning because a lot of people, I think, when I started working with Greg, I had done, helped Todd on some things when I worked for him years and years ago. Did some things on some covers. I inked a cover. Todd went on vacation for his birthday or something like that, Hawaii or something, and he left me a cover. So that was the first time I ever inked Greg.
Wow.
It was intimidating, but it was cool to have the opportunity here.
So when you came back around to working with Greg,
right? I started, you know, with the early stuff, that stuff. I don't really count that. So the official start of working with Greg was Haunt.
Right.
Which kind of sucked because it was, Todd wanted me to do it digitally. And then, you know, so I asked Greg, how he felt about it, and he said, I hate digital. So I'm like, oh
man.
So I'll do this and I'll never work with him again.
Right.
But at least I had the chance.
Right.
So towards the tail end of it, I decided not to ink it digital, and I did it over Blue Line, which is you get the scan of the pencils and process it through Photoshop and print it out. So that was the closest I could get to inking a traditional piece. So I did it that way, and I think he could see that there was something there underneath mm-hmm. there. I wasn't there yet, but it kind of launched into the possibility of doing more together. And then obviously he went to DC, and we never really communicated on Court of Owls as far as like talking on the phone. People think we talked on the phone and, you know, chopped it up. We didn't. Minimal emails. Greg's really good about not giving you direction. He kind of does what he does and then lets you have the freedom to do what you do, so, which is a good thing. We didn't really start to sort of what I consider have like a solid relationship as far as like teamwork and everything until we did a show in Miami together, and it was when we were going to do, was it Reborn, I think, and we kind of, because we were at the same show, we're at the same hotel, mm-hmm. and my wife and the kids came, and Greg and Jamie came, so we literally ate out every day, so we were hanging out every day, right. and hanging out at the bar talking. And so I felt like I got to know Greg on a personal level.
Right.
And I find out, oh, this guy isn't that much different than me.
Right.
It's pretty funny. It's cool. So I think that's what started to make things kind of click. Greg does things in his inks that I think, I'm not saying I draw like Greg, but there's similarities in as far as like some strokes that I do mm-hmm. that feel comfortable. So for me, it just feels natural to read his pencils.
Right.
So I never really struggled later on. Earlier, maybe, like I'm trying to figure things out.
Right.
But now it just feels organic. It just feels natural to work together.
So maybe some of our listeners might not be familiar. I mean, there aren't a lot of inkers, especially not of your caliber, because I think a lot of people, you know, the artists are doing their pencils digitally, and it goes like straight from, you know, pencils mm-hmm. to colors. Right. So what is inking and what isn't it? I mean, I know a lot of people, I think too many people think you're just tracing with ink, and that's not what it is.
Yeah,
right?
And I always think I'm terrible at explaining inking. What isn't it? Inking is not, I'll say, okay, inking is not always tracing. There's guys that they don't want to say the word trace, but there are times where you're literally tracing some things.
Right.
And that's things that may be mechanical, where you have to pull out a ruler and you know, rule that building line or whatever.
Right.
There's different ways of doing a ton of different things, but there are instances where you nail down exactly what is put there. But the mistake that people tend to make is they look at inking as just the word inking, like a job or whatever. It's inking is being an artist. So if you don't know how to draw, your inking skills are going to be limited. You're not going to be able to make the decisions that you need to make if you're just an artist. I can teach anybody how to ink. It's not anything that is that complicated to figure out when you think of it as tracing.
Right.
Or you just think of it as simply inking. Anybody can put a mark on a page, but it's the decisions you make that matter, and how you read, how you interpret what the penciler is putting down. So a lot of times I have to explain it, because most people, a good majority of people, have bad tattoos, and then you see those really good tattoos. So if you look at inking as, you know, if you were a tattoo artist just on paper, the good tattoo artist can draw, they can paint. A bad tattoo artist is probably a mediocre, you know, draftsman, right. Can't draw that well, probably can't paint. And you see the separation. And digital never solves anything at the end of the day. In my opinion, it helps guys along as far as if you might have if you might not be confident with your line, you might have a shaky hand. There's some things digital will clean that up,
mm-hmm.
will correct that. But at the end of the day, it's still, you still have to make decisions, you know, whether it's digital or traditional. But you are seeing a lot of guys do digital.
Yeah, I wonder. So we see a lot of artists go straight from digital and then it goes to the coloring. You're basically coloring their digital pencils. I think that's the reason that we're seeing fewer inkers, or is it that the pencils are so much tighter now than they used to be?
So I think the reason you're seeing fewer inkers is, and I'm just going to be blunt, is because publishers aren't appreciating inkers and they're not paying us. And, you know, I don't know how many people speak to that, but I don't shy away from it. You know, when you have a new guy or young guy coming up and this is what he wants to do, and you tell him that, you know, hey, $40, $50 a page, that's not a livable wage. That's not a wage that's going to allow you to grow as an artist.
Right.
Without having to go do two or three other jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Or you have to work in volume. So I think what you're seeing as far as the newer inkers now, as you'll see them on a lot of different things, there's no focus being allowed to happen because they're not being paid to work on their craft to do what they need to do. Publishers don't really promote team. Their version of team is, if you notice, is writer and penciler typically.
Yes.
And there's other people that collaborate on this artwork. You know, you have the penciler, the inker, and the colorist.
Yeah.
You know, any two of those, the penciler and the inker, can the inker and the colors can ruin what the penciler put down for you. So. You know, there has to be some sort of acknowledgement given to the craft of inking when it's done well.
Right.
And I don't think there's enough of that going on.
Yeah, and I think for listeners that don't understand, it's like the inking is additive, right? I mean, mm-hmm. you're providing texture and tone and line weight to help with perspective. And I think that a lot of people just think, like going back to you're just tracing with the pen. No, the penciler right. may, I mean, when you have a collaboration like you and Greg, you guys work together for so long, Greg knows he can take shortcuts on his pencils. I mean, God knows how detailed he is, and it takes forever. So now he can start taking shortcuts and not worry so much about line weights for backgrounds and foregrounds and things like that. And that's what you do, right?
Right. I mean, Greg, we've done panels together with Greg where people have asked the question about, you know, inkers and all that kind of stuff. And Greg puts it perfectly, you know, if inking were tracing, he could just pick from anybody to be his inker.
Right.
What makes me special?
Right.
Why did he choose me? Greg's not at a point in his career where an editor is going to pick his inker. He picks who he works with.
Exactly.
And that's just it. So if he's choosing, and he's choosing me, I have to believe he's choosing me specifically for a reason. And if it were just tracing, then it wouldn't be any big deal. He could just pick anybody.
Right.
You know, so it can't be that it's tracing. That argument never stands up. It's cool to have these podcasts where we talk about, you know, this, what's going on with inking, and because you don't hear it talked about a whole lot.
Right.
You know, us inkers will sit down and we'll complain about things together, but, you know, the general public doesn't get that little bit of information. I might not be the best at explaining it. It's a little early still. It's, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's important to get the word out. That's why I wanted to sit down with Jonathan, so you listeners understand that it's not tracing. And I mean, I grew up, and it was penciler, mm-hmm. inker, cutlers, right? That's what I saw. And then, you know, over the last 10 years, whatever, we've seen it with the rise of digital, and again, pencils being more tight, you just haven't seen as many inkers, as many good inkers, too, especially.
Right.
And so I worry about the future of ink. I mean, there's still a place for it. I can always tell, being a longtime reader, when something's gone straight from pencils to, and it doesn't.
Right.
It just doesn't.
I think not to confuse the difference. Okay, because there's going from pencils straight to color is different from, I think, when you take away traditional inks and you go from. So the different processes, you know, the going straight from pencils to color, then you have pencilers that are inking themselves. And that's a whole nother thing.
Right.
Because now we have a situation, and I'm not trying to bag on pencilers, but, you know, there's pencilers that pencil really well and are terrible at inking.
Mm-hmm.
So now you have this whole other thing where you have publishers that would prefer to just pay the penciler an extra rate to ink themselves. So now you remove a guy who is specialized in what I do. And then you have, you know, so then you have the inking digitally situation. I never think digital is going to replace inkers. I think it's going to make it harder for a newer generation to become inkers, because now you're having pencilers that are just bypassing an inker and inking it themselves.
Right.
Because they're being given that little extra incentive to do it.
Yeah, but again, it's about being additive, right? So
right.
If you take, I mean, Greg's put his pencils down, and that's what he sees in his mind. And then he's going to just put inks over. He might as well just pencil it in ink. You know what
right,
I'm saying?
Right.
But you get another set of eyes who, you know, who has talent of their own, who knows how to draw. Like you said, the best inkers all can, you know, mm-hmm. draw. So now you've got two talented people working on an image.
Right.
It's got to be better. There's got to be more there.
Right. It'll never be exactly what the penciler is giving. Because it can't be. It's my hand over Greg's work.
Right.
So it's not 100% Greg. And that's okay if you're collaborating in a way that you both feel we're hitting on something.
Yep.
Greg is an amazing inker. Greg is just a really good artist. He can pencil, he can ink, he can paint. So there's things from Greg as far as, you know, we're talking about pencilers who ink themselves, that I pick up from Greg that I like,
mm-hmm.
you know. So it's just a, you know, it's a tricky thing, because whenever you're doing something that a company or whatever doesn't value as that important, then you always feel like you're working a career of insignificance, or you're just not wanted.
Right.
You know, everybody wants to feel like they're contributing something and feel wanted. So, you know, I've just been doing this for, you know, 20 something years, and now I'm up to the point where I'm working with Greg and Scott and FCO, and I feel valued.
Mm-hmm.
And Greg lets it be known, and that's important. What's more important than me speaking about this is hearing pencilers talk about inkers.
Right.
That's the difference, right? So, you know, I could be viewed as just a disgruntled inker who just doesn't want inking to go away.
Right.
But when you start hearing pencilers talk about the value of their inkers, that speaks to the publisher.
Yeah.
I hope, you know, speaks to the publisher.
I think one of the things where we can look back on the history of comics and see that is when you do get a matchup of inker and penciler, and then from whatever particular project they're on, and then going forward, it's always, you know, like Alan Davis and Mark Farmer. Mm-hmm. Capullo and Clapion, you know,
it's
John
weird to hear
Byrne
that,
and Terry
yeah.
Austin, right? I mean, but there's a reason why inkers in the past, like you would see these really high profile artists, well known artists, and then it was they found an inker they liked, and then they stuck with it. Obviously there's value there.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
John Byrne wouldn't stick with the same inker and Terry Austin for so long if it didn't matter to him. If he's like Greg says, if it's just tracing, I'll just pick somebody out of the audience and pay him $5 a page, right?
Yeah, and it, you know, it becomes part of the work, it becomes part of the expectation. Like you were talking about, you know, the team thing is, you know, when I did start picking up comics, and I always paid attention to the credits.
Mm-hmm.
In the beginning, that was the only thing I read.
Right.
The credits, and I looked at the art, because I wanted to know who the artists were.
Right.
And while I didn't understand inking specifically, like all the technical things, I understood that that was someone that had to be important to the process, because this was a collaboration. So my brain is like all over the place.
No, it's great. This has been very informative, and I think that our listeners are going to get a lot out of it. You know, we are starting our 9-panel grid episode soon that are particularly focused on artists, and I'd look forward to having inkers on. Maybe we can even have you come on at some point. When you're awake, yeah, right. We'll take somebody's pencils and we'll show them, hey, yeah, this is what it means to be an inker. This is what it means. This is what texture means. This is what line weight means. This is what spotting black means. Because again, I think the education needs to be there, because again, publishers need to know that fans like care about it. That it matters.
Yes. Right. Yes. That's a big thing. You know, they can convince themselves that the only two people that matter are the writer and the penciler. But when we get in front of fans at shows, you know, they'll come up to you and they'll let you know,
yep,
you know, who they're looking for to sign their books. You know, so it's an important thing to have everyone's, you know, talked about as a team, especially when it matters, when people are appreciating the work.
Cool. Know.
So.
Well, I appreciate the time, Jonathan. Are you active on social media at all?
Just tweeting this morning. Yeah, I'm on Twitter. It's Jonathan Glapion. Same thing, Instagram. No Facebook. I'm burned out. So, and then my website is glapion.ink.
Great. So if fans or anybody, aspiring inkers, they want to check out your work, you're always putting stuff that you're working on up there and stuff.
Instagram is probably the hot spot right now, because I'll put like little work in progresses. I'll do little, you know, the little 1 minute video snippets and all that kind of stuff.
Right on.
I do a lot of stuff on Instagram and Twitter as well. And I try to, if you have questions on Twitter, I try to answer those questions back as much as I can.
Right.
I try to be accessible, I guess.
Great, that's awesome. And listeners, I'll put links to Jonathan's website and those two social media accounts in the notes if you want to check them out. So again, thanks, man. I even learned a lot, so that's awesome. And we look forward to having you on again, maybe to do a demo, audio, video, both. So that'd be awesome.
Yeah, I'd love to do that. I'll get some coffee next time, and then I'll make a bit more sense.